handle the truth.
The Denise Simon Experience. The Truth Matrix. Vetting, exposing, drilling down to the truth.
Rolling Thunder, this is Hitman, see ya. Over. Hitman, this is Rolling Thunder, see ya out.
The Denise Simon Experience. Exposing politics, lies, demagoguery, spin, fraud.
Grid to suppress, Mike Charlie, 4359 or 2-1. Grid to mark, Mike Charlie, 4739 or 8-9 out.
Promoting individual situational awareness. Question, probe, notice, ask why.
Mark spoke on the deck. AGPT, gas TOT 53.
And now, the Denise Simon Experience.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're so pleased that you decided to join us here on the Denise Simon Experience, hosted by WDDQ Talk 92.1. And with that, Tim Rivers is kind enough to stop on the side of the road to join us as he's traveling. And Tim was recently with us. He is the author of the American Gulag Chronicles. These are really the January 6th letters from prison. And if you think this is over with the Department of Justice, it's clearly not over. Clearly. But I think there's a 5-year statute of limitations. I don't know. We'll have to ask Mr. Tim Rivers. But welcome back, Mr. Tim.
Thank you, ma'am. Always glad to be on, Denise. Yeah, you know, there are some statutes here, but I think they have the momentum in 2024 will tell all. If we don't reclaim control of the three-letter agencies and bureaucracies that have seized this country pretty much in a death grip, I really don't see a lot of future. So everything hangs on what everybody like you and I and everyone who's listening to this and all the people involved in politics and certainly everybody of voting age, really the future is in our hands right now. Some people are really scared of it. I've heard some folks are scared to go vote or they don't think maybe if I vote wrong, then I'll be responsible. But we are out of time and we just had another suicide not even 2 weeks ago in the J6 community. And it just continues, you know, as you arrest more people and you continually pressure to take these plea deals. You know, book 2 is now available for pre-order and you'll hear the desperation as these people are watching the folks ahead of them go through the meat grinder, you know, and come out sausage on the other side. You can begin to hear the desperation in their letters and in their concerns. There's almost a stoicism that's kicking in. Like, I can't really stop this, and so I just have to learn how to ride it. And it's very telling because we are losing not only the J6ers, but the people in the support fight. They're, you know, almost 3 years. People are wearing out. Some folks are just reaching their mental limits and their spiritual limit of how much much sorrow can you ingest.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, I'm hoping that people like your audience and you and I, we begin to put our shoulder to the wheel a little harder because we are really at a precipice. I think you could say if we were the herd that was running along a cliff, the J6ers are the ones who have been pushed over by the pressure. And we're all at the precipice, whether we realize it or not. They're just the ones that are showing us, you know, how far down you can go. And I think that's beyond, we're beyond messaging now. We have to be active. We have to act. It's okay for me to talk to you about this. It's perfect and really relevant for you to read the books and hear the letters, but then you have to stand up from behind the keyboard, from behind the radio, and you have to walk out that front door and begin to do something. And that's the message you're going to hear in book 2 from these guys. The art of confinement, they have turned this imprisonment, this persecution, this societal death, really a civic death. They've turned this into something that I don't think the government ever anticipated. And you'll figure that out because book 2 is a book of lessons. There's 10 lessons, and at the back there's a test, because I feel that destiny is testing America to determine whether we are moral enough, whether we're vital enough still, whether we deserve to be a free nation and a free people. And if we fail this test, there is no retake. There is no curve. It is pass or fail. And that's what I think that's what book two tries to convey.
You know, interestingly enough, it's fascinating the people that are in power in government that do get assigned to read these books. You know, the FBI will have somebody, you know, go read Hunter Biden's book, or somebody in Congress will, and then they'll start comparing it to cases and whatnot. So you can bet that there are those at the Department of Justice or at the FBI or at the Marshals that have, you know, picked up the books. And so they're very aware of what is happening here. And they're certainly not about to back off, are they?
You know, I've never read either a fairy tale or a myth where the demons were apologetic, that they recognized their own evil and then said, "Oh, gee, we're so sorry. Let's fix it." It's up to, in a battle of good and evil, it's up to good to either balance or overcome evil. That's what it is. I guess it's down to, like I said, this test that we're going through in America. Are we good? Or are we neutral? Because if we're neutral, evil will win. That's the end game. There either is equalizing force or there is superior force. If there is neither of those, then you're overcome. That's the end of it. And so I guess as I look at what's happening to some of these guys in jail, folks, we're just losing them. We're losing them to a death of hope. That no matter what, that even though there are some people that are talking to and crying out that there's not enough of America that seems to care, and that those who are in power will do everything they can to overcome the few that do. But people like you, Denise, who have a radio show, try to bring truth out here. People like myself and all the folks who work in Tag C and in J6 News, they're all just trying to bring out truth, and the government wants to squash that badly. And you can see now that Steve Baker just got indicted, you know, because they want to shut the blaze up.
Explain who Steve Baker is. Explain to the audience who Steve Baker is, if you would, please.
Steve Baker is another journalist who was there on January 6th, just like David Simrall and many people. Actually, there's like, I think, a dozen journalists, including a few from AP, who have been indicted for being there on January 6th, even though they were there as a member of the Fourth Estate, doing what the Fourth Estate is supposed to do, which is faithfully record activities. But yet they're going to be prosecuted because they had the temerity to actually show everybody what happened that day. Mm-hmm. And in Steve Baker's case, he's gone further and become himself an investigator, working with all the other great investigative folks that are like Gary McBride and David Simrall. That's at StopHate.com and M5 Newsgate. These guys are relentless. They're not giving up. And we've looked at all the videos that are out, folks. And you can't get more plain vanilla than what they released to show you. And by the way, I just want to point out, so they gave us these videos, right? Let's just do a little math. How about I watch for 8 hours a day, I'm going to watch a video. And I'm going to do that for 5 days a week. And then I'm going to do that for 52 weeks. At the end of that, without having slowed down or done anything other than just watch it at speed, I will only see 2,080 hours of video. There are 40,000
hours
just of CCTV. Let's not talk about the thousands of hours of body cam, which are much more important because they have audio attached to them, mm-hmm. Where CCTV does not. And so, and you've heard some of these body, you know, here, you know, Lieutenant Tao just goes screaming, losing his mind, and all these folks who, you know, at the front line and the police lines who just basically went berserk. Their body cams are important video evidence. Evidence that should have been ready for all of these people's cases who are now spending years in prison having never been really given the evidence that would have exculpated their crime. And therein lies the problem of the three-letter agencies in this country that have gone from bureaucracy to fiefdoms, where they can basically wield power instead of serving. And that has to be undone. And I'm not sure how fast we could do that, to tell you the truth, or how destructive that process would be to the civilized environment that we call America under stress right now.
Tim, I'm glad you said what you just said, because I learned a new word over the weekend. And the new word is Siloviki. It's Russian. And Siloviki is a faction in Russia. It's an elite group of businessmen and leaders with close ties to the security state, the police, investigative committee, and other agencies. The term Siloviki translates to people of force or strong men. So what you have described, what is happening, not only with the J6, but I think in a lot of cases you can apply the blueprint of January 6th to so many other things. It is just exactly what I said, correct? It's Siloviki. It's a Russian tactic, correct?
It is, and I'll just point out, the only difference between a Russian oligarch or a border cartel and a Wall Street banker is Wharton Business School. Otherwise, they have the same methodology, the same, you know, take no prisoners, leave scorched earth. And you're seeing that here. You're seeing those people in power behind the money protecting those who are at the front. And you see now the trail of the money. I mean, you can't ignore it anymore, folks. You've got to be blind, deaf, and dumb not to see the millions of dollars that are going into the corrupt hands of the swamp. Whether it's at the top or at the lobby level, almost everybody there has caught the disease. And I don't have a cure for it, so maybe sometimes you have to just isolate lepers into their own colony and then bring, you know, healthy people into the fold to do the work of society. And that's what it feels like to me. I don't know who to trust anymore. Okay, we got McCarthy out of there. Speaker Johnson, damn, he's almost as bad. Who else do I want to throw in there, you know, and let the car run over the next speed bump and tear out the undercarriage before I finally somebody who knows how to drive? That's really the dire condition we are in. We are witnessing a dying scream of the Republic. Do you answer that, or do you just sit here and listen to it scream? It's up to individuals, Denise. It's up to people like you. It's up to people like me. It's up to people who are listening to this to decide whether or not they want to live in a gulag 2.0, which is what America will become if we do not stop what is happening with the overreach of government. And again, back to the J6ers, these were the canaries in the coal mine. They weren't the first. You should have seen what happened to the Anderson or the Enron people. What, I mean, there was bad things happened there, but the DOJ turned that into a slaughter. Or go even further back to the Bundys and see what happened to them with the Bureau of Land Management in Oregon. Yeah. These were the pilot programs, and they have been fine-tuned on J6, and you're next.
What's frightening to me is that we have become so saturated with these kinds of tactics that when it comes to what is happening at our southern border, what happened with the protests outside of the Supreme Court justices' homes and the Supreme Court leak, and what is happening with the Bidens. I mean, we can just go on and on and on. Is that, you know, decent people are just throwing up their hands and saying, there's nothing, you know, we can do. I mean, we're just going to have to live with this. And they've decided to kind of become introverted here a little bit. And they just don't even bother to read an article or find out the facts, put things in context. And unless it really happens to them personally, like if they get carjacked or if they're closing, you know, public parks for the sake of, you know, the illegal migrants coming in. You see what I'm saying? Unless it happens to them personally, there's indifference here. And I think indifference is probably the most dangerous place we can be. Did I say any of that part right, Tim Rivers?
But they are. It is happening to them personally, Denise. It is. It's just the water hasn't reached boiling yet, but it is hotter than heck. Is your cell phone tracking you everywhere you go and recording?
Sure, it is.
Google,
and nobody seems to care.
And the government can ask for that anytime they want. Is this telephone call that we're listening to right now being able to be filtered and run? Trust me, this telephone call is being filtered by the NSA and those folks who are worried about, you know, people who are waking up to what's happening in government. Do you think that when you pay for that gallon gas at the store or for that inflated dollar of groceries, do you think that money isn't going into other people's pockets? Is that artificial destruction of the money that you worked so hard for, which is now falling apart, basically? You can tear that dollar into little tiny pieces because that's about how much it's worth at the cash register anymore. You are in Gulag 2.0. You just haven't woken up to the severity of it.
And I try to explain that to people, and they go, I have nothing to hide. That's always the very first thing that they say to me.
But everybody, you know, everybody has something to hide.
Of course. And it isn't just on a domestic platform, although we ought to pay a lot of attention to that. Because, you know, what China, what Beijing, the Chinese Communist Party did to Hong Kong, tells us, and what Russia is doing to Ukraine, and what Iran is doing to Israel, Turkey is doing to Israel. You know what I'm saying? There's such a collapse of law and order. And take out law, just put order. We don't have any order here anymore. I mean, and I think that bothers me probably more than anything else, that you've got good people that want to do something, but they've become like, oh, well, you can't fight the government, but you can, correct?
You can. I mean, you're doing it. I'm doing it. We're not fighting the government. We're resisting the government.
Redressing our grievances.
By the way, you and I and everybody who's listening to this, our hands are supposed to be on the wheel, folks. You're not supposed to be in the back seat or the passenger seat watching the car careening down the road. Put your hands on the wheel. You have a wheel. It's called your representative. It's called your senator. You actually have, you know, some way to control that wheel. It's called a telephone. 202-224-3121. Call them up. Ask to speak to Speaker Johnson. Ask to speak to your representative. You know what? Call them every day. Put it on your speed dial. Don't do nothing. If you just because you think that one act means nothing, if you act and your neighbor acts and the other person acts and I act and Denise acts, it means something, folks. It means something. Every single person matters.
Well, I don't want to take, I don't want to take away from the J6 and the work that you're trying to do here, but it's kind of like, what happened on October the 7th in Israel is, in what they're doing to Gaza today, is just it almost has the sense of this is going to be their solution and the final solution, not to coin a pretty awful, you know, historical phrase, but what Israel is doing here is all without, you know, bombs and guns and whatnot, but it's almost as like we need to recognize really what is happening here on a domestic basis. And as you say, have your hands on the wheel. I mean, let's get some traction here. I think that's really what you're telling us. Yes.
Yeah. You know, those of you who can't drive, how about navigating? I mean, you could help out. If you don't feel you can be on the front line, if you can't do some of the things that Denise and I do, you could donate money to help those who can. You could be a support organization. You could write to a prisoner. You could write your congressman. There are so many things you can do. Even if you feel you don't have the hard power of standing up in front of the press or going out on a street corner or attending an event, you still have power. And if you don't use it, it's wasted. It's totally wasted. Please read the letters. Go to lettersfromprison.us. Take the lessons, listen to the lessons that these guys have sent you from inside the gulags of America. Take the final test at the back and then determine whether or not you're worthy of being a free person. And that's, I can't say anything more than that. This is our test. if you fail this, you're not graduating.
And so when you have, what is it? We're 8 million, 10 million. We don't even really know what the number is of illegals and how they come here into the United States. They're given gift cards by non-government agencies. They're given health care. They're given a place to stay in these hotels at $400 and $500 a night. Cities are running out of money, like New York. That's cutting all kinds of civil services in order to pay for this. And yet we have a bunch of people that attended January 6th with no ill intent whatsoever. In fact, I would argue patriotic intent to show support, to show a love of country. And look what has happened. I mean, it's such a bad place, Tim. I mean, to make these kinds of comparisons.
You can't jump ship now, folks. We are way far from shore. It's time to really put your back into it and start stroking, okay? You jump ship now, it's a long swim back. And so I'm sorry, I do have to jump now. I've got the next call coming in. But I think everybody, if you haven't figured it out yet, this is your call to action. This is your last opportunity to save your country, or you can just look a little bit into the future, read Alexander Solzhenitsyn's Gulag Archipelago. That is where we're headed. And read the book Gulag Chronicles. There's letters from prison of the first year, Art of Confinement in the second year. When you get done with that book, I hope it turns you into the warrior that it's turned Denise and I into, to try and save this republic and save these men and women. When you buy the book, all of those proceeds go to help these people and their families. And I just really appreciate you having me on, Denise.
Well, I appreciate you staying in the fight. We appreciate your perspective because you're getting it personally from those that it's very personal to them and consequential, life-changing for sure. So, Tim Rivers, J6 Letters, you know, Gulag Chronicles, thank you for this and spending some time and staying in the fight. Stay well, and I hope you'll come back soon. Ladies and gentlemen, we've got more coming your way on the Denise Simon Experience. Stay with us.
Thank you.
Victor deployed for the first time to Afghanistan in 2003. At 4 a.m, my phone rang. They said, "I regret to inform you that your husband was wounded in action." Victor sustained a moderate traumatic brain injury. I was doing school full time, and I was also then caring for Victor. One of the most important elements of caregiving is taking care of yourself. I just didn't want to forget that I also had goals and that I also had a life. What I did is I challenged Victor to meet me halfway. There are almost 6 million military and veteran caregivers across the nation. We have our own journey, and we can fulfill that journey at the same time that we are helping our loved one.
Visit aarp.org/caregiving for a free military veteran's guide to navigate your caregiving journey and better care for your loved one and yourself. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
They are our cuddlers and co-workers, purr machines and love bugs, and constant companions. They are our pets, our family, and they make life so much better. When we face unexpected challenges in life, so do our pets. That's why we're on a mission to support people who love their pets and the pets who love their people, ensuring these families stay exactly where they belong, together. And you have something to offer. With an open heart and mind, there is nothing you can't do. There's no gesture too small or too big when it comes to helping. Whether donating a bag of kibble, sharing an Instagram post of a lost cat, or welcoming a foster pet into your home, every bit of kindness counts. You can help keep pets and people together. Visit petsandpeopletogether.org to learn how to be a helper in your community. This has been a public service announcement brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
We'll be right back.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're so pleased that you stayed with us here on the Denise Simon Experience, and you are loyal listeners to WDDQ Talk 92.1. And with that, I'd like to welcome back Scott McKay. He was with us pretty recently talking about his book, Racism, Revenge, and Ruin. It's all Obama. But now we have a new situation here. Well, a new one and an additional one that we're going to actually talk about. So, Scott, thanks so much for keeping up with all of this. But more than that, rejoining us here on the Denise Simon Experience.
Sure thing. Glad to be on.
You know, I tried a couple of years ago to cancel Netflix. And I kind of turned the account over to my son, let him watch it because I refused to watch it anymore. And he watches kind of crazy things on it. So he wouldn't let me cancel it. Not that we're sharing the account, I just pay for it, but he does all the watching. But I'm getting madder and madder and madder at Netflix. So we have this new situation. Yes. We have this new situation here about this film that Netflix did in complete cooperation with the Obamas, right? Tell us about it.
Yeah, well, Barack and Michelle Obama are listed as executive producers of Leave the World Behind. And in, you know, the entertainment media write-ups of this movie after it came out, the reason why, apparently, is that Obama was given the script and made a whole bunch of notes, supposedly to add realism to it. I don't know quite what that means, but having watched the finished product of this, I do have some ideas. It's an adaptation of a 2020 novel that was a bestseller. They made some pretty significant changes to it. Obviously, they did the typical woke recasting of some of the parts and so on. But most of the changes appear to be things that may have come from Obama's influence on the movie. And having watched it, I think it's very much, put it this way, if it's not a movie that Barack Obama requested in those notes on the script, then it very well could have been. Because one of the things, I mean, it's a movie about the end of the world, essentially, or the end of civilization. But the tone of the movie is matter of fact, and it's very unnerving, frankly. I mean, society collapses, and it's not really a tragedy. There's zero reference to God at all in the movie. Things just kind of happen. They're not really explained. The characters are pretty much completely in the dark about why these changes are happening. But nobody seems all that upset about it, other than Ethan Hawke's character. Everybody else is just sort of taking it in stride. And I, having watched it, and of course, I did a bunch of research into Obama's background and also into his presidency, obviously, although, you know, really a lot of that was just kind of reliving the 8 years that we were subjected to. But, it definitely comes through that this is Obama's movie. The Obamas are people who hate American society. And that's a controversial statement, but it shouldn't be, because it's patently obvious that's true. I mean, you can go back and read quotes from them. I mean, Michelle Obama was never proud of America until her husband got the Democrat nomination, right? Mm-hmm. Obama's promise to his own people was the fundamental transformation of America. Well, if you love America, why would you want to fundamentally transform it? Mm-hmm. Their disdain for the American people and for the society we live in is pretty well documented already, even though you're not supposed to talk about it. And so for this movie to come around and have the kind of tone to it that it does really isn't a surprise. And, you know, there's been a million Into the World movies. Most of them at least give a fig leaf of appreciation for the society they're going to destroy in their movie. Right. This doesn't. This is like it all goes to hell. And that's OK, because it's no worse than what we already have. And that's not a mainstream philosophy at all.
Scott, I'm actually reminded of a book I think I read in 2005 or 6 titled One Second After. And it was
Newt
a novel.
Gingrich and Bill Forshin. Yeah, I remember that.
Yes.
I read it myself. It was very good.
Very, very good. And it essentially talks about the end of, you know, whatever, the way we live, because of an EMP. And there's not one thing in there about society and hating it and all of this kind of thing. So, I mean, you can kind of compare the two, and you can see where the left, with Obama kind of leading the charge as the grand marshal, they're putting division and racism above everything else, correct?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, that's certainly true. I mean, there's a scene in Leave the World Behind, and this is, it's not a big spoiler because this happens early in the movie, but, you know, Julia Roberts is kind of the typical middle-aged white Democrat lady who, you know, she's just a nasty person, right? And then Ethan Hawke is her kind of beta male husband who goes around in flip flops all day, which that's just a thing for you. It drives me nuts to see guys do that. But anyway,
careful,
you know,
and
they,
in Florida, we do flip flops all the time, but never mind.
I know. Well, you know, I'm in Louisiana and most of the guys in Louisiana shouldn't be wearing flip flops. Anyway, so they rent this. It's like an Airbnb thing. They rent this mansion on Long Island for the weekend because, you know, they want to get away. And then there's this power outage, right? And I guess it's, you know, the second night they're there or something. Mahershala Ali and his daughter show up. He's in a tuxedo. They drive up in top of the line Mercedes. It's very obvious they're not criminals, right? And he says, hey, look, I own the house. We need a place to stay tonight because, you know, the city is all blacked out and it's not really safe. Can't get it up the elevator in my building and all this kind of stuff. And Julia Roberts doesn't want to let him in because he's a black guy, right? And it's like, that wouldn't happen, right? Like, that absolutely would not happen in modern America if a guy in a tuxedo drives up in a Mercedes and he says he's the owner of the house. You have zero reason not to believe him. And he says, look, we'll bed down in the basement. You're gonna, you know, like when a guy proves he is who he is, you're gonna say, okay, fine, right? Or if not, you're gonna be polite about saying no. And she's not. And of course, later in the movie, it's obvious that she's sexually attracted to him, which is, you know, okay. Anyway, it's just, you know, and it's like, it's so obviously like, this is how the Obamas see the world and how they see America. And that really showed through during his time in office, you know, from the bitter clingers comment to the way he treated all of these different racial incidents around police shootings and everything else. I mean, it was, this dripping. Yeah, the Fort Hood massacre was a workplace violence thing. And like, it was so like, he took the most hostile interpretation of every single event possible when it came to the American people. And he was never called out on that the entire time he was president, or at least not in the legacy media, not in people who weren't explicitly conservative. speaking, whether it was on a Fox News or talk radio or what have you. But the Democrats in the legacy media were never able to get there where they could objectively analyze the fact that this guy might have come off as, you know, cool in a Hollywood way, but at the end of the day, what he really was cold. And that he was for criminals rather than law-abiding people. He was for the downtrodden rather than the successful. He didn't buy into any of the maxims and values that made this country what it is. Like, all he wanted to do is tear the whole thing down, mm-hmm. which, you know, is what Racism, Revenge, and Ruin is, you know, talks about pretty explicitly, is all the ways that, you know, turned into the America that we have now, which hates itself and is increasingly dysfunctional and can no longer communicate across ideological or racial or, you know, sometimes even sexual lines. And this is all stuff that Obama and his people have fostered over the last 16 years or so. It's not organic. Right. This was contrived and executed. And so, you know, I think it's important for us as a country to come to grips with that and realize, look, this was done to us. This isn't something that we did to ourselves or that, you know, it was just sort of how society naturally evolves. That's not what has happened in America. Look, they make all these movies that are clearly left-wing propaganda, whether it's predictive programming or just, you know, nudging people to believe certain things because they get exposed to them over and over again in pop culture and in other ways, you know, and they're contrived. It's when they do these propaganda films, generally speaking, they don't perform well at all at the box office. Like all of these, for example, these action movies where, you know, the action hero is a girl who beats up guys twice her size over and over and over again. The public is like loudly signaling, we're done with that. We don't want to put up with it anymore. It's not cute. We don't think it's entertaining. Women don't like watching it. And yet they will not stop producing these movies. And they just, you know, you just had the Marvels, which is like the biggest flop that universe has ever had, because that's what it's about. And the public's not interested. And yet they keep producing this because they're trying to influence society. And this happens in the political realm like there's no tomorrow. And now it's happening in the corporate realm. Even after the public has shown how irritated we are with this nonstop social justice messaging, the NFL is still beating us over the head.
I was just going to say that because I was watching the beginning of the game last night. And, of course, you know, there was something on there by the NFL with social justice. And we've heard that term for such a long time. And I said to my husband, I said, you know, can somebody just explain to me really what that is anymore? Because whatever they, I think, intended it to be, it's now lost its real definition.
Well, I mean, the NFL chased away a ton of its audience when they went full bore into that stuff in whatever, 2016 through 2021, I guess. And then they got away from it because, I mean, it was clear, okay, we've learned the lesson, right? And now it's like sneaking back in that they're going to give an award to whoever the biggest, you know, left-wing activist player in the NFL because, you know, he's promoting social justice. It's like your fans want justice, not social justice. Right. I mean, they would actually like a justice system where if you commit a crime, you get judged by, a jury of your peers and, you know, sentenced accordingly, not based on who you know or what cabal you're a member of or what your race is or whatever. Like, we want justice. and yet they're going to give us this. And that, again, that's an Obama thing, right? You never heard of social justice from 2007 and further behind in the past. This is all stuff that's come about through Obama.
And yes, and these coaches on the sidelines of the NFL and pretty much every game that was on this weekend were all wearing these black long sleeve sweatshirts. And what did it say on the front? You had to work kind of hard because of the kind of the graphics they had on there, but it said they read the front of the, and it didn't matter what NFL team it was. Justice, opportunity, freedom, and equality.
Right. I think I saw police. They had these hats that had the team logo, and then it had like kind of as a background behind it. It was like a word salad where it was, you know, social justice and police and education and opportunity and all these different things. And it's like, okay, why are we doing this? Like, what is this? Is this some sop to the players union that we're going to have one week where we, where we pander to the social justice mob?
And it's aren't we already pandering? I mean,
ever stop pandering is the real question.
That's it. If you look at a lot of these mayors, if you look at these chief of police across the country, and even if you look at a lot of these district attorneys, well, you know, they're all there with, I would say, Obama's embrace. He's really happy about it. And then what ends up happening? These places become completely lawless. I mean, I feel badly for Memphis, and I feel awful for St. Louis. I mean, you know, Chicago, New York, I mean, San Francisco.
Well, you know, and the funny thing about, like, take Chicago, for example, you could throw New York in there as well. All of this sort of woke pandering and Black Lives Matter rhetoric and so forth, it's all falling pretty flat with the core market for all of that stuff. When, for example, in Southside Chicago, you know, they should be up in arms about the copious murders that are going on over there. But instead, what they're really up in arms about is that they're awash in illegals that are being dumped there. And of course, you know, this is being hyped because they say it's Greg Abbott's fault. But the fact of the matter is, word is out. Yeah, the word is out among the illegals that Chicago is a place to go. And so they're making their way to Chicago. It's not Greg Abbott that's sending them there. And the same thing is true in New York. You got all these hotels are filled up with illegals. And, you know, the people who are the working class and welfare class in New York City are looking around, and all of a sudden they're getting squeezed for resources. And this is, you know, they're going to try to blame this on racist white Republicans in the suburbs.
Oh, they
are.
But
that's not what's happening. And these guys know it's not what's happening, which is why you got the politicians in these cities are starting to hear it from their own people. And so this whole sort of woke project is kind of coming apart at the seams a little bit. And every one of these polls is showing that the Black community is not going to be as uniformly Democrat in 2024 as it's been in previous elections. I mean, poll after poll after poll is showing Donald Trump is getting 20% of the Black vote. And it's all Black men, by the way. Black women are about 99% Democrats. And we'll vote for whoever the party's
changed.
Nominee is.
All right.
Yeah, I don't know that. Like, because right now the Democratic Party is I'm not going to say its sole focus, but its primary focus is to keep as many Black women captured within its ideology as possible. But with Black men, it's very much becoming a different scenario. And they're losing the Hispanics. They're doing terribly badly with the Asians as well.
I'm glad you mentioned the Asians.
Yeah.
You know, we have this whole scandal going on at Harvard with you know, the Palestinians and the anti-Semitism and now plagiarism. But it was also Harvard that was sued, and rightly so, because they don't want to accept Asians as students.
Right.
And so where are these social justice warriors when it comes to that?
Well, it's...
it's a rhetorical question.
Well, you've heard this, and you're going to hear a lot more of it, is this term white adjacent, right? And it's been applied to Asians. Ultimately, it's going to be applied to practically every ethnic group in America whose economic outcomes are better than those of typical white America, which includes all kinds of people, by the way. I mean, I want to say Filipinos have the highest per capita income of any ethnic group in the country. Mm-hmm. And there are several other ones that, you know, other ethnic groups or nationalities that also fit that,
Monica.
That description, in that they outpace the American average, and they also outpace the average income of white people. Nigerian immigrants, in fact, outpace typical white America in income. So that, you know, the facts don't really support any of this stuff when you have immigrant group after immigrant group that outpaces the privileged people in this country. And everybody knows this. Okay, that's the thing. It's not really a secret. You know, you're not supposed to talk about it.
Right.
But, you know, this is the least racist country on earth. And it's, that fact was on display back in 2008 when the American public gave a guy who was manifestly unqualified to be president a chance to run the country. Part of that was John McCain, you know, was somebody nobody really wanted to see president. He'd been around forever. They knew he was corrupt. They knew that he was inconsistent in the things that he said. They knew that he had disdain for his own voters. And that was, you know, the vice versa was true. But, you know, so under the circumstances, you know, it's like, well, let's give Obama a chance. We'll put this racial stuff to bed once and for all. And he has spent the next 16 years trying to inflame the country on race, when the fact of the matter is there is more racial goodwill in America than in any other country on earth, and it's not even close. You know, under the standard that's applied to America by the left, every single country on earth other than this one, and I guess a few countries whose borders were established by colonial powers, but every other country on earth was established because of racism or because of, you know, ethnic considerations, right? Turkey was established for the Turks. Germany was established for the Germans. And we're established based on the idea of freedom, and somehow we're racist. The whole thing from the very beginning, this entire accusation was asinine. And the only reason it gets any purchase here is because the people of America are good people. And we don't like the fact that we had a lot of the same problems as a country at our founding that these other places our folks came from had.
Well, you know, we don't hear this administration talk about the Uyghurs. We don't hear this administration talk about the child slaves that are in the Congo that are mining cobalt for the electric vehicles, their batteries.
Right. Right.
And so it you know, and that's virtual slavery. That's child slavery. We don't hear them talk about, you know, what is happening at the southern border with really sex slavery. So,
right.
you know,
and yet slavery is used as the reason why the Arlington Reconciliation Monument has to come.
Oh, I'm so furious about that one. I can hardly stand it.
Right. So modern day slavery is you know, unremarked upon. The fact that in Libya, which is a creation of the Obama administration, there are open slave markets where Black Africans are traded as chattel. That is happening right now as we speak. Was not happening in Libya before the revolution, the Arab Spring thing that the Obama administration did, that got our ambassador and three security guys
Benghazi
killed, right? Mm-hmm. Right. So you have that. No move has been made to shut any of that down. We're not shutting down sex slavery. That's, you know, like you said, the southern border, or any of the things that China openly does, right? And of course, in the Chinese case, it's because they paid for those considerations through Hunter Biden, and we all know it. You're not supposed to talk about it because that's a conspiracy theory, or something.
Scott McKay, is there a fix to any of this? Is there going to be some kind of a renaissance here in the next generation that we get by this?
I think ultimately there will be, but to get there, we need a Republican Party that's willing to throw off the inhibitions that allowed Obama to get where he is, or where he is has gotten. And, you know, some of that is to adopt a lot of Trump's style, but you need an entire movement full of professional politicians who are committed to an iconoclastic, middle class oriented, unafraid mentality, so that when they call you these names that, you know, the Obama Democrats specialize in calling people, that it doesn't affect you in the least. That, like, to me, that's the important piece, because everybody is tired of all the woke sermonizing, and everybody's tired of that. But the answer to that is to play over the top of it and to hold the other side accountable for the damage that they have done to the people that they purportedly were supporting. And when you get a Republican Party that's willing to do that, you're actually going to have people who believe things and will fight for them, rather than this country club crowd that's always looking to retreat.
And you've got the Obama administration that is a carbon copy, a Xerox copy, a clone of the Obama administration. And
right.
So
this,
you know,
is
we're
the, yeah,
to,
it's Obama redux.
Yeah, and the inaugural address, we're going to bring this country together, and we're finding out more and more and more how much of, you know, half of this country hates the other half of the country. So we're there, and there's a lot of opportunity. There's a lot of fundraising that goes on with all of this. And I think it could take years, you know, to resolve this or get beyond this and minimize all things with this. I think it's another kind of deep state, to be honest with you. But
sure.
And certainly with policy and lots of policy, including immigration. But Scott McKay, author of Racism, Revenge, and Ruin, It's All Obama. I'm beginning to agree with you on this one. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm still going to stay mad at Netflix. But anyway, Scott McKay, thanks
as
for this discussion. it's a candid discussion, and I think it's well-deserved instead of we self-censor ourselves. Do self-censoring.
I totally agree. Hey, by the way, just to put a quick bug in everybody's ear, you know, Racism, Revenge, and Ruin makes a
phenomenal
good Christmas present.
Christmas stocking.
Yeah. Pick it up at Amazon and all the other places where they sell them.
Thank you, Mr. Scott McKay. And ladies and gentlemen, there's more coming your way. Stay with me.
The conversation starter. This is Talk 92.1 WDDQ 8L Valdosta.